Of the Hornets, don't.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the same place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
None of them can ever play against. It makes us ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, we battled Mississippi State on Saturday, and you were thinking a blowout. I was thinking a close game. Doesn't it somehow feel like we're both right?
I definitely do not feel like I was right, man. It didn't feel like a blowout. We were fortunate the score turned out the way it did. Was not happy with the overall performance. It was not the performance I expected for the score to be what it was.
No, it was a lot of really big plays. You know, we scored four touchdowns, all, you know, 60 plus yards. And then it was a lot of blah on offense. And, you know, the same could be said on defense too. We gave up a lot on defense. You know, in terms of between the 20s, Mississippi State couldn't capitalize, and we had a lot of big plays on defense, you know, an interception, you know, some forced fumbles, and of course, a boatload of sacks. And so it just felt like, you know, we rose to the occasion, the tide rose to the occasion, but in a blah game. And look, you can take this two ways. You can say, oh, look how close Alabama was to really struggling and not winning, or you can say, look how dominating they were kind of able to look in a game that was kind of blah.
Yeah, we talked in last week's show about the 45 plays of offense that LSU had and how we were fortunate that, you know, we rotate so many guys in. Well, we were very fortunate that LSU only had 45 plays because Mississippi State had 87 plays on the day. They averaged 4.5 yards per play, you know, 400 yards of offense. The listeners can look at the stats. That's embarrassing. I'm sorry. There's no way to sugarcoat that. And so a team that is supposed to be dominant does not give up 400 yards and 87 plays and not have an ability to get off the field. And so we can break down the reasons here in a minute. We're lucky that that was not a nail biter at the end of the game, only because of a couple big plays, or they could have lost that game. That game could have been an even game in the fourth quarter with just a 50-50 shot of losing the ball game.
Yeah, that was, you know, people were going to look at, you know, the big highlights, the big plays, and there were a number of them, and you're going to look at the score and you're going to think, well, that was the Alabama blowout that we all kind of expected. And I don't think you have to peel too far under the covers to see something different than that. Why don't you talk to us about offense? What jumped out at you on offense?
Well, you know, Lane Kiffin went back to being a Pac-10 coordinator. You know, I guess you have to be successful running the ball down the field more than a couple games in a row to develop muscle memory for what the identity of your team is. And so everything we talked about on the LSU podcast, just, you know, flush it down the toilet. You know, it was run to set up the play action. Well, at one point, David, I saw a stat that said Mississippi State had had the ball 34 plays, 17 running, 17 passing. We had only had the ball 17 plays total. And of those, we had only run the ball 6 times, I believe, out of 17. So in our first 17 plays, we had run the ball 6 times.
Is so, there any chance, will you provide any allowance that we were trying to preserve Henry?
I will not, because when I saw that, I immediately wanted to bitch at Lane Kiffin, and I wanted to hang him out to dry again. Because of how many times have we said, okay, you're first and goal at the 2, run the ball 3 times. But then when you go back and look at some of the player interviews, apparently there was numerous times that the Mississippi State defense calls Jake to audible to a run play, to a pass play.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't, you know, obviously they didn't share the number of plays. And so apparently I can't hang Lane out to dry too prematurely. I have to wonder why the quarterback checked to the pass so many times. Because apparently there were numerous times at the beginning of the game that, Jake, he checked out to what he thought would be a good play call, which obviously wasn't a good play call.
Well, I think the answer there, I think it's a little bit self-evident. If you think about, well, how would we try to defend Alabama? If you kind of put Manny Diaz's shoes on and you would say, you know what, I'm going to try to let Coker try to beat me. And I'm going to take away Henry, and I'm going to try to, you know, they're going to have to beat me with Coker. And so, you know, they're a stout up front team. They had some lapses, of course, but otherwise they were pretty stout up front. And so why did Coker check to the pass? Because they were taking away the run. They, you know, they had given them something to read, take away the run. And so, you know, in some sense, we were kind of playing into Mississippi State's hand. They wanted us to beat them passing. And hey, you know, if I had to play us, that's what I would do. So I think some of the answer to that question is, you know, I think it's out there for the taking.
Now, I understand, and that's why I have to be fair to Lane, you know, when I made those statements. But like, you look at the very first drive of the game, okay, and we'll do defense in a minute. So the defense dominates at the beginning of the game and gets really. Should have been three sacks on the first series, but they only gave credit for two because he barely made it to the line of scrimmage one time. And so we get the ball, and we throw the ball on first down for 8 yards. Now we have second and two at the 24. I would love to know, in that situation, why you don't run the ball twice. That's all I'm asking. It's second and two at the 24. Take a megaphone and tell the entire stadium we're about to run the ball up the gut two times to our 240-plus pound running back. And if you can't get 2 yards on two plays, then you deserve to punt the ball. That's all I'm saying. There was more than one time in the game where the down and distance dictated running the ball, and we tried a cutesy pass or a low percentage pass, and we didn't connect, and that kind of stuff drives me crazy.
Yeah. So you're saying, you know, even if it's a, you know, understanding the concept of a run pass option, you're saying, look, it's a run option. You know, if you don't like running to the right, then audible to run left. That's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah. Just in certain situations. Now, unfortunately, there was once or twice, surprisingly, and this is the offense, you know, this is on the offensive line. There was once or twice where it was third and one, and either we checked into a run or we actually stuck with the run call, and Derrick Henry didn't get a first down. I believe it was just one time in the first quarter that we had third and one, and Derrick was stopped for a 1 yard loss. So there was a couple times that we ran the ball and we didn't have success on those, you know, short yardage plays. And so in that situation, you know, I think it was some of both. I think it was the offensive line being dominated up front. I don't think the offensive line had a great game.
Right.
I saw numerous times where we had missed blocking assignments or we weren't getting a hat on a hat, as Saban likes to say. And that was allowing them to blow up some plays.
Right. What'd you think about Henry's performance just overall?
You know, I think Henry looked very good for somebody who has had the load that you and I have talked about. It goes back to the mantra that I love of just, you know, feed the rock, you know, just give the beast the ball. And it's what you've heard me say, you know, get him over 20 carries and something's going to bust loose. And so I just think they should have run the ball. Okay, here's what I'll say. He finished with 22 carries on the day.
Yep.
And some of the carries late in the game, I wouldn't have given him the ball. I just would have given him the ball earlier. I would have given him more carries sooner, but I'm not surprised with that he finally busted one loose.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, he had 22 carries for 208 yards, and so that sounds like a really productive day. But they're really kind of Nick Chubb-type stats, right? I mean, he had one rush for 74 yards. He had one rush for 65 yards, and he had 20 rushes that netted 69 yards. And so he was looking at a 3.45 average. And so, you know, Henry is teaching a lesson to all the young bucks out there. Go ask out all of the girls, right? Every one of them. And 20 of them are going to say no, and two of them are going to give you weekends of your life, right? And so just go ask them all out because you're going to score a long touchdown.
All right, I don't know where that came from. Okay. No, I agree with the numbers in that analogy. He was going to, you know, you're not going to have the gap discipline that Coach Saban talks about all the time, right? Every defense is going to not always get in each gap like they're supposed to. And that's why he had the 74-yard run in the second quarter. And, you know, the one he did around the edge, man, as soon as he got wide, he saw the end zone, and there was only one guy that was going to get him. What was so funny about the safety, number 11 for Mississippi State, is as Gary Danielson correctly pointed out, he had the angle on him. But I think that teams just don't realize how fast he is. And so the guy was just kind of jogging and wasn't running as fast as Henry until it was too late. And when he finally turned on, he's like, wait a minute, he's past me. And yeah, it's funny to me that all these guys just really, I mean, is there not enough tape on him this season now to say, guys, run as fast as you can to start because he's pretty fast?
You know, when he took that corner, I thought, you know, this is a 4 or 5, and it was TV, right? And so there's kind of a depth perception issue. And I was thinking, you know, he's going to run 4 or 5, 6 yards, and, you know, they're going to force him out of bounds. And then he got the corner, and, you know, the safety was coming over, and I thought the safety's definitely got him. And then he was gone. And it didn't even look like, I mean, you're thinking the other guy looked like he was jogging. It didn't look like Henry was running full speed. But then he's gone. He's by you. And he's so tall, and he takes just those long strides that, you know, when you watch a little guy run, it's, you know, dig, 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 dig. You know, his feet are just going a million miles an hour. But when you watch a long strider run, it just doesn't look like they're running that fast because their legs aren't moving that fast. But with each stride, you know, they're covering twice as much ground. It's just, you know, he's like a gazelle. That was an impressive run.
No, that's a good analogy because when you slow-mo that run, as he gets past the line of scrimmage, he starts kind of like, you know, almost like a stallion. You can see that motion get with the legs. Mm-hmm. You can see the legs kind of get built up more, you know, a little bit more speed. Mm-hmm. His upper body, he's not like, you know, he's not moving all over with his upper body, right? He's got very little loss of movement, right?
Right.
Like he knows how to run without exerting a lot of effort, if that makes sense what I'm trying to say.
And so he's like a duck, right? I mean, he looks kind of peaceful, and then he's taking those long strides that really kind of belie the effort that he's exhibiting. It's kind of impressive. What else on offense jumped out at you?
Well, you know, I just want to go back to the offensive line for a second because there were several times where, you know, we were trying to, you know, pull one of the guards, and they would miss a kickout block, or they would go to trap, and one of the offensive linemen on the other side of the line would get blown up in the backfield, which would throw them off, and so they couldn't go get to their guy who would make the play. We weren't getting good movement off the ball, and you know, I don't know how big the Mississippi State defensive linemen are, but by damn, you're sitting here blocking two beasts in practice every day. And I'm not willing to give our guys a pass on this. You're blocking A'shaun Robinson, Jaron Reed, and Jonathan Allen. And oh, by the way, you have a true freshman who benches 500 pounds. You're blocking in practice is better than anybody else you'll face on any Saturday. And so I'm a little disappointed in how we played on the offensive line in the game.
Yeah, our offensive line has been, you know, a little bit mixed, and you know, for all of the praise kind of we're getting nationally and looking like a dominant team and power running game and such, you know, there's enough negative plays and enough kind of lapses across the offensive front that, I mean, I like where we're going. I like our trajectory. I think if we kind of, you know, keep our nose to the grindstone, then there's no limit to what we can accomplish. But if I started to think about, well, what would keep us from accomplishing that, you know, it's some negative plays at just kind of the right time. You know, the big run, Henry's first run right up the middle, you know, Gary Danielson was trying to find, he even said, I'm trying to find an offensive lineman to praise on this play, and I can't find one. You know, here's this long touchdown run, and it almost was as if he could have run that without an offensive line. You know, Danielson tried to say, you know, the closest there was to a good block was Ryan Kelly, and Ryan Kelly, I don't even know if he got hands on the guy, but he at least made the guy take two steps around him, and you know, and then Henry was gone. You know, we've got to see some improvement there.
No, I agree. What did you think about the interception that Coker threw? I thought Ardarius had a pretty good game, and I wanted to talk a little bit about his route running, but specifically on that play, you know, Gary pointed out that he felt like it was a read play,
yep,
from the wide receiver, and that the wide receiver and the quarterback are supposed to both make that call. And if that is correct, it looks like Stewart made the obvious call to take it to the post. And Jake Coker seems to have been premature in releasing the ball, or he would have had a pretty easy touchdown.
Yeah, that's, you know, and that's kind of how I saw it too. That's always the, you know, kind of the fun thing. You wish you could be, you know, in the meeting rooms and kind of see who really, you know, missed the call there. The quarterbacks a lot of time get more blamed than they should in those type of situations. But I wonder if the receiver wasn't actually right on this one. You know, it's
because where Jake Coker threw the ball, you know, you have to think that had to be on him, right?
Yeah, exactly, and. You know, he's thrown a lot, you know, getting hit, and this is just, you know, maybe he just was quick to make a read and made the wrong read. That's kind of how I would assess that.
Well, tell me a little bit about on Calvin Ridley's touchdown play. I actually was calling for them to run the ball there, to be fair, and they threw the ball on a third and five. Let me back up a second. So I was being critical on that touchdown, before that touchdown, because, you know, first and 10, they threw it 5 yards. Now they got second and five. Once again, I'm thinking, run the ball twice, get you a first down. You're in good field position at the 40-yard line. So we have a pass incomplete to Ridley on second and five. We line up third and five. I'm fussing because I want them to, you know, run the ball. And then they pass the ball to Ridley. Tell me what you thought about the freshman's juke, which you know, made it to the ESPN highlights.
Yeah, we can talk about, you know, play selection and all of that. And if we just kind of discount that for a little bit, and we just say, you know, the execution of this play, man, I'm going to tell you what, this may, and I went back and, you know, kind of rewatched it, you know, 3 or 4 times. That may be my favorite play of the season, because there's just so much going on there that. The little quick, you know, hook to Calvin Ridley, you know, true freshman, just superior athleticism is what he demonstrated there. The move that he made and then the burst of speed that he demonstrated was just incredible. But then you kind of layer around that Kenyon Drake just pancaking a Mississippi State defender to really free the initial sort of free of Calvin Ridley.
Total unselfishness. Yes.
Yeah. And then racing down the field to get, you know, kind of caught up and in position to help make a play was Ardarius Stewart with a block. And so to me, that all just kind of comes together, right? You've got, you know, this freshman wide receiver that's taken reps from these two seniors, and these two seniors step up and just make really athletic and dynamic plays in their own right to spring the touchdown. That's just, you know, I mean, we've seen some teams with crappy chemistry, and you just don't get that kind of play, especially the downfield blocking. And when you get some of that downfield blocking and you get some of those intangible things, and we've talked about this before, you know that you have something special, right? And that play, for all the, you know, it's some of my favorite players on the team, especially when you think about Drake and Ardarius, you know, making plays when they don't have the ball, unselfishness. You've got this just new kid on the block, true freshman, making just an incredible athletic play. And, and it all sort of is congealing around the message that the coach has kind of been instilling, you know, for these guys, and some of them for multiple years. And of course, it's a big touchdown, you know, in what's, you know, otherwise a tight game at that point. So, I mean, this is one of my favorite plays of the season.
Well, it was definitely awesome for both Drake and Stewart. I'm surprised that, you know, they're going to the freshman, right, of all their choices. I'm surprised that they went to the freshman because, you know, he had to be the first read. I'm not trying to be mean here, but he had to be the first read.
Yeah, on that route, he clearly was the first read.
And so I'm a little surprised, you know, I'm not saying he hasn't played well, but I'm surprised they called the freshman's number on 3rd and 5 at their 40-yard line in that situation.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things, and it's kind of the cliche. You know, at this point of the season, no one's a freshman anymore. And so, you know I just kind of hyped it up. But, you know, there's something true to that, too. This far into the season, you know, clearly he's our best wide receiver. If that was a question earlier in the year, it's not a question anymore. He is our best, you know, kind of most talented receiver. And I think the time that he has spent on the team, you know, wasn't he here for, you know, for spring and then all of fall camp? And so, I mean, he's been around the program enough to, you know, hey, we've got a 3rd and 5. We can trust that we're going to get this guy the ball. And Saban in his press conference today, he kind of made a big deal because they were asking about, you know, hey, these youngsters kind of stepping up at running back, and we should talk about that too. And he said, you know, it takes more than talent to play. You've got to have a maturity. And he gave sort of this kind of rambling Saban-esque answer, right, where there's more to it than just, you know, who can run around and be the most athletic. You have to be able to be, you know, consistent and know your assignments and all of these things. And he called, you know, Calvin Ridley out by name, that clearly here's, and Minkah Fitzpatrick as well, you know, clearly here are two freshmen that are doing it. And so it can be done by youngsters, but, you know, it's a little bit more challenging for them to do that. And, you know, Calvin Ridley certainly has earned those accolades.
Oh, sure. And I'm not saying he hasn't earned it. And obviously, you know, there was YouTube videos of his summer workouts, right? And ironically, he was out there with Chris Black in the summertime, and he was doing those cuts inside those cones, and, you know, he was working his tail off.
And hey, so, you know what? We got our answer on Chris Black, and I know this wasn't part of the game, but, you know, it came out last week that he's going in for surgery, that he's had an ankle injury, and he's tried to kind of hobble his way through it during the season. And you've been very vocal and like, well, why do you think he's not playing and kind of what's going on? And, you know, we'll go a couple of weeks without seeing him, and then he'll come out and we'll think, well, maybe this is, you know, his opportunity, and it never really materializes. And we don't know that it would necessarily, but certainly with him being, you know, and coach even said he has good days and bad days and more bad days than not. And we finally kind of made the decision that he needs to get that fixed. And so I thought that was interesting to kind of get a definitive solution to a question that we've been pondering most of the year.
No, that is good. I did not see that. So that is good. I'm glad to hear there's something that is the cause of that, and that, he can have surgery and get that addressed.
I hate that he's injured, but I like that there's an explanation that makes sense to me. Right.
Oh, sure. Well, hey, a minute ago I was talking before we flipped the field, I was talking a minute ago about, you know, Jake Coker on that play with Stewart and who was wrong and who was right. There's another one that I wanted to point out. In the second quarter, we had the ball our first possession in the second quarter after they had just missed a 50. They had just missed a long field goal attempt. We get the ball, start at the 32-yard line. Nice field position. We have a third and four at the 38. And Jake Coker throws a pass to the sideline to Mullaney. It was kind of a forced throw. It was, you know, it wasn't a great throw. It was going to be a hard catch to make. Mm-hmm. And then when, you know, when CBS comes back and shows the play again, you see Stewart running a really nice route, yep. dragging across the middle. He's 25 yep. yards down the field. He should have been right in front of the 6'5" Jake Coker's vision. You know, we don't have a 5'10" quarterback here. And I'm starting to get concerned at Jake Coker's ability to read the field. And so I'm just, there's another situation, which is why I thought Stewart had a really good game, where Stewart ran some really nice routes, and Stewart could have had over 100 yards receptions in this ball game and didn't get the opportunities. And so, you know, it just seems like there was a few instances yet again in this game where he didn't look for his second and third progression, at least it appears to me, at guys who had run some nice routes.
Yeah, see, I'm going to agree with everything that you said there. My conclusion is going to be a little different. You know, you said that you were starting to get concerned. And as I was even watching the game, and, you know, and he threw a pick and everything, but as I was watching the game, I came to the conclusion that, you know, this is what Coker is, and it's enough for us to win with. And so he's not going to always be able to check and read all of his receivers. He's going to make, you know, a pick at some point, but he's going to be tough and the rest of the team likes him, and he's going to run for a first down, and he is going to connect on some big passes. And that's just kind of what he is. His game lacks a certain refinement, which I think is what you're looking for. And, you know, if he were a redshirt sophomore and we're going to be in the system two more years, then we might see some of that. I just think that, you know, for whatever reason, you know, he went to Florida State and was behind Jameis, and then he got here and somehow, you know, was behind, you know, Blake Sims. I just think he's been, you know, arrested development in terms of, you know, his quarterback career. And what we see is what we get. And I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing.
I'm not mad at him, right? Because this is year one. I'm just saying that I'm seeing glimpses of why he wasn't going to be the guy last year.
Yeah, yeah, I'll buy that.
And there was a lot of hype, which I probably bought into some as well, of he's going to be the guy, because we had seen for 2 years how poorly Blake Sims had played in the A-Day games. Okay.
It looked like a wide open door. I mean, yes. You know, and it wasn't. And so Blake came in and did what he did. But I'll tell you what though, and I'd be hard pressed to tell you which one of the guys it's going to be, but when the quarterbacks get in the quarterback room and they watch those kinds of things, and, you know, obviously they're coaching to Coker at this point. And when they're walking through and they're visualizing these kinds of things and they're saying, hey, we understand what you did here, but, you know, was there something that prevented you maybe from seeing this? There has got to be one of those youngster quarterbacks that's just sitting there quietly licking his chops. And yes. It'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see come spring, just the wide open battle that there is for quarterback, and who really is soaking up the lessons, that
who's paying attention,
playing behind Coker is giving them.
Well, I don't think the coaching staff knew that Coker could run like he could. Right. Sure. He probably didn't get a chance to show that in his competition against Blake Sims. And so Blake Sims was able to bring more to the table, and Jake Coker, like you said, he's given a lot of heart. He's given it all he's got right now. I see those kind of things, and it just frustrates me. That's all.
Yeah, So some of those runs that he has, you can't fabricate that, right? You can't, you know, it's not like an athletic quarterback that can go out there and make a move and kind of show you what he's got. When you, you know, when you are running for your life, you're running for your life, and you can't fake that.
Yes. You know,
in practice, you can't
fabricate that in practice.
I'm not going to take my head off. And so I don't have to worry. And so I don't have to, you know, run like I'm about to, you know, get clobbered.
Yeah.
And in a game, he's demonstrating a capability that probably is very difficult to practice.
No, that's the scout team does not show him that.
Exactly.
Well, who is your mini game ball?
Hey, I want to just ask you one more question. I know we'll talk about the upcoming opponent, but, you know, we've got to get Bo and Damian some additional carries. And so I'm going to throw three names out there just for grins. But who gets more carries next week? Henry, Bo, or Damian?
It should be Damian without question.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit disappointed that Damian only had three carries on the day. This is where Alabama, you know, Derrick Henry should have been, he should have had carries earlier and got out.
Yeah.
And Damian Harris should, as soon as Kenyon Drake went out of the game with had his freak special teams injury, which we can talk about, Damian Harris comes in on the very next drive, but only gets like one of his three carries.
Yeah.
And so for him to finish the day with three carries, and Bo Scarborough, who hasn't had a carry since like the Georgia game, you know, finishes with as many carries as Damian Harris. I'm sorry. You know, ego is ego, right? You were the number one running back in the nation last year, right? You know what Derrick Henry's feeling because you were the same kind of guy. For you to have three carries in the game and Bo Scarborough get three carries on the game, that's just wrong. That's just not the way it should have been done. And so this better be 20 carries Damian Harris, 10 carries Bo Scarborough, and Derrick Henry better not even know where his helmet's at.
Wow. Okay. You know, I would have called for the backup running backs a series earlier. And in fact, I would have left the starting line in, but I would have gone Cooper Bateman and the two younger running backs and kind of in whichever order, and it sounds like you would go Damian, and that's fine. But I would have done that a series earlier. And your idea of let's just run the ball, I would have just been running the ball to give the guy reps. And I would have rotated, and I'd like to, for them both to get some reps, and we'll see. I don't know that it'll be a 20-10 distribution. You know, Henry's going to play some, but I'd like to see him limited, you know, to like 10 carries, get him out in the first quarter, and then let the other guys, you know, two possessions kind of thing, right?
But why does Derrick Henry even need to play? Seriously, why does he even need to play?
He doesn't. He doesn't. Now, you know, does that mean that he won't? No, he'll play. And then you could reason that, you know, to keep him in the flow of the game and the pace of the game and whatnot. But, and so if we want to give him 10, to, you know, 6 or 8 carries in the first quarter and get him out, yeah, that'd be great. Hey, look, I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't mind if we return the opening kickoff for a touchdown and then held them to 3 and outs and returned 2 punts for touchdowns, and we're up 21-0, and the offense hasn't stepped on the field. And I'm saying, well, I'm sorry, Henry and Coker. I guess you just don't get to play today. I mean, that's
– Oh, no. Yeah, I'm with you. No, I'm with you. I will say to your point about the distribution, as I go back and look at this play-by-play here, it is very interesting that Derrick Henry – had 3 carries on that last drive. On the drive we had right at the end of the third quarter, we ran the ball 3 times in a row to Derrick Henry. Then at the start of the fourth quarter, he carries 4 times in a row. And then, well, he's basically the only running back running on that series. So of his 22 carries, David, he got 1, 2, 3, 7, 8, 9 of his 22 carries on the last He got 9 of his 22 carries on that 14-play drive where the field goal was blocked.
Right.
And then he proceeds to come back in and score his touchdown, right? Well, what's very interesting on that very next drive, to your point about Cooper Bateman and the backups, is we alternated Damien and Bo every single time. Those last two drives, it was Damien, Bo, Damien, Bo, Damien, Bo. And so isn't that weird that we did it that way? Were we auditioning for the backup right there by you run a play, then you run a play? And I mean, we sat there and did that on six running plays in our last two drives. We made them run in and out off the sideline and alternate like that. Doesn't that seem weird?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. Auditioning might be too strong of a term, but we're giving both of them an opportunity to kind of establish themselves. And, you know, and I think we're going to see a healthy dose of that on Saturday. I think that, you know, we're probably not going to have a problem getting the lead against these guys. And then we're going to run these backups. And you know, they're going to come out of this game. They may both have, you know, 10 or 12 or, you know, 14 carries. And I think that'd be fun to see.
Oh, sure. But I guess they're giving Bo the nod because of his injury, right? And you shouldn't lose a spot because of an injury, but you would think Damian Harris would have finished with more carries on the day.
Yeah, I'll buy that.
That's for sure.
Who's your mini game ball?
You know, my mini game ball, even though you stole the credit that I wanted to give on Calvin Ridley's play, I have to give it to Stewart. And even though he is not mini game ball worthy, I don't really care because I have been critical of Stewart at the beginning of the season that he was not, you know, making plays and maybe he wasn't contributing like, you know, I thought he should be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll never know what has turned the light on for him, but you know, he followed up a good LSU game with a good Mississippi State game and is really stepping his play up. And, you know, those couple plays, the play on Ridley to be unselfish that you called, and then the route running he did, the aggressive running after the catch, I'm just really pleased with how Stewart played in the game.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And, you know, for that matter, I'd say kind of tag me in because – I'm going, you know, Drake with my mini game ball. And so I'm a little bit sentimental sap here because, you know, he got injured and he's been one of my favorites. But, you know, he had just a pair of catches. He actually didn't run the ball, but, you know, he slobber knocked the defender on that play. And if you didn't go Stewart, then I was going to split my mini game ball because they both get a tip of the hat in my mind. Flip the field. Talk to me about defense.
You know, the first play, I guess first of all, I just want to start by giving kudos where it needs to be to the front defensive line, specifically the front four guys. We talked about in the LSU game, you know, I pointed out to the listeners that we had ran 12 different guys with their hands in the dirt, even though some are linebackers, sure, and that it was nice that we had that depth with just, you know, 45 plays. Well, Dave, I got to tell you, man, if we didn't have the depth that we talked about last week, I don't think we could have put this kind of pressure on this team and them have 87 plays. For our offense to be as inept as they were and have as many three and outs as they did, I'm just tickled to death that we got to Prescott so many times. And, you know, I think I heard the CBS announcer say that I think the most times he had been sacked in a game had been three.
Yes.
And so to get nine of him, which you should have called 10, I'm just so pleased with that, man. That has to be where we start this defensive discussion.
Yeah, you know, I agree. Nine sacks is just – that's just phenomenal. And that does not even begin to count the number of times that he was hit. And, you know, there's a couple of those he just eked across – you know, the line of scrimmage to keep it from being a sack. But, you know, even on just a flat out runs where he gained a few yards, he was getting hit and, you know, he got hit all day. And there's no doubt about, you know, he spent some time in the ice tub and he knew that he was in a game when that was over. And, you know, there's got to be a part of him that said, holy cow, I cannot win a game like this by myself. And as hard as he played and as well as he played, you know, over 300 passing yards, you know, he's their leading rusher. He is not on a team that allows him to be, you know, kind of a one-man team, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And it really makes you wonder, man. You know, we don't follow Mississippi State, you know, close enough to answer this question, but you look at the two running backs for them that got carries, Holloway and Fitzgerald. You know, Holloway has a 19-yard carry, finishes at 4.9 per carry. Fitzgerald has a 13-yard run and finishes at 4.8. So the two of them had 12 carries for 70 yards. Okay? 12 carries for 70 yards. Dak Prescott had 26 carries for 72 yards for a lovely 0.5 yards per carry because of all his lost yards. So why did they not just give the ball to Holloway and Fitzgerald a little more? They averaged, I guess what I'm trying to say to you is we've done this a long time now. We see a lot of the stat lines where the running back for the other team averages 2 or 3 yards a carry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to be fair to these two guys, they both average 5 yards a carry. Give them the damn rock a little bit more instead of getting your quarterback killed.
Well, and they had, and this kind of goes back to, you know, this kind of goes back to this being kind of a tale of two games. They had offensive performers all up and down their lineup. I mean, you know, counting Dak and the two guys that you mentioned, they had three rushers that rushed that had rushes of 13 yards or more. They had five receivers that had catches of 19 yards or more. And if you break that down a little bit more, Tommy, they had two receivers that had catches of 40 yards or more, and one was over 50. And you think all of those types of performances, that's a lot of moving the ball. They didn't have a touchdown. They did not have a touchdown. And so I know we had a goal line stand, and you think, man, that's a lot of production to not get any value out of it. And you know, fortunate for us, right? I mean, they could have had a touchdown very early in the game. And, you know, some of the big plays, you know, if they're moving the ball and scoring, then the big plays that we have don't demoralize them in quite the same way. How many times have we seen that, right? Where we methodically move the ball up and down the field and somebody will get a big play. And we'll just think, and we'll even say, that's okay. They just got lucky on a play. We are methodically moving the ball. What we're doing is sustainable. What they're doing is not. And that whole sort of mantra was flipped on its ears, because what they did was sustainable. They just couldn't get points for it. We had sort of the big burst, big plays, and, you know, we blew them out.
No,
it's an odd game, right?
It is, man. But I look at Dak Prescott with his 43 pass attempts, and you know he was hit pretty much on all of those.
Nearly, yes.
And then he had 26 carries. So out of their 87 plays, he basically got hit 69 times because he got hit on all his runs.
Literally that many times. But you know, if you just said, you know, if you said a third of them, that's more than 20 times getting hit. That's a lot.
It is. Well, dude, if he dropped back 43 times and he ran it 26 of 69 times, I guarantee you the boy got hit 35, 40 times.
I'm just saying, right. There's no way that he didn't get hit a lot. We're saying the same thing.
Sure, a ton. And so it's like, how do you do that to your quarterback, right? I don't get that. You shouldn't have come into this game. Okay, I'll say this a different way. You shouldn't have come into this game thinking you're going to run the ball against this team. And so I guess maybe they didn't think they'd have 87 plays, right? You and I didn't think they'd have 87 plays. And so maybe that explains the distribution, because they finished with 45 passes and 42 runs. And, you know, maybe that's just it in a nutshell, is they expected to be a pass-heavy attack, and it didn't work out that way. Although early in the game, when they showed 34 plays, they had run the ball 17 times and thrown the ball 17 times. Their balance was 100% split down the middle. So I'm just shocked that they let their quarterback get hit that many times. But I will tell you that, you know, they had the ball 11 minutes in the second quarter. We had the ball for 3 minutes. And you and I both know that we've had teams in the past that didn't have this depth that we would have got our butt kicked by this Mississippi State team a few years ago. You take these offensive numbers up and down the field that they had.
Sure.
With the lack of depth on our defensive line that we talked about, you know, right against Georgia, right? When we talked about our podcast the other day, man, we'd have been up a creek.
Yeah, this is a Mississippi State. We've been beaten by less by Mississippi State teams. Mississippi State teams are not as good as this one.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt in my mind. Now, last year, I thought maybe, evidence kind of proved that out, right? They were number one at one point and undefeated when we faced them. Last year, I thought they were a better team than this year. They had, you know, more depth and a stronger running back and what have you. But this is still a really strong team. And, you know, they're just kind of built around one guy. And, you know, it's typical Mississippi State, right? Depending upon how strong they are, they, you know, in any given year, you take the elite team in the SEC, and it's been Georgia before, it's been Tennessee before, it's been Florida before, it's been, you know, it's us, it's been, hell, it's been Auburn. And so whatever the elite team in the SEC is, right, they have, depending upon how good Mississippi is that given year, they're 60 to 70% of what that team is. And that's just who they are. And so this year, they're whatever percent of we are is, you know, kind of what they are, six, call it, you know, 68%. But they've got, we've got one of those darn fangled quarterbacks that gives Alabama trouble. They just, that's enough for that they thought that they were going to win. And, you know, Dak's really good. But their team is not good enough for him to be a one-man show.
No. And just the depth that we have on this team with the number of guys we can throw at you is why I think that, you know, they only had success between the 20s.
Right.
Well, I want to point out a play in the second quarter with about 2 minutes left. And I wanted to point this play out for Reuben Foster. Just because got to give him some love here on this play, because we talked about his progression of, you know, staying on the field more. He was in a situation where, you know, it was a passing down. Mississippi State has the ball, 2 minutes left in the first half. The wide receiver is open. Reuben Foster has kind of moved himself out of the play. He reads and reacts to the quarterback quicker than the wide receiver. He comes back and he lunges and knocks the ball down. And just kudos to him. That dude wouldn't have done that a year ago. He couldn't have done that a year ago. And I think this guy is molding himself into an all-around linebacker slowly but surely.
He really is. I mean, his performance this season and this game may be his best of his career. You know, yes. He had 10 tackles, 2 pass breakups, and 2 quarterback hurries. You can look at that and say he's having success. And I know he's a linebacker, not a defensive back, but, you know, the tackles, the pass breakups, and the quarterback hurries, he's having success at, like, all three levels, you know, getting after the quarterback, at the line of scrimmage, and in coverage. And that speaks to his maturity, his development, and that speaks to coach trusting him. And I say coach, you know, coaches plural, the coaching staff, trusting him in those different scenarios to keep him on the field. And, you know, that's kind of where you were going. But, you know, I completely agree. And, you know, definitely kudos, hats off to Reuben Foster. This is the kind of guy, you know, it's almost like he's Ragland Jr., right? You know, Ragland this time last year was really bursting out on the scene. And Ragland, I think made, you know, obviously I'm biased, right? But I think he made the wise decision to come back to college for a senior year rather than, you know, going pro. And I think that's going to pay, you know, dividends in his draft stock. I think Reuben Foster needs to follow that model. I mean, he could go and be drafted because his athleticism and he would wow people at the combines. But I think he needs a little more time in the system to develop himself as a linebacker as opposed to an athletic defensive player.
Oh, sure. And this was just, you are correct. This was probably his best game of his career. And him and number 19 have come a long way from when they opened the season against Virginia Tech.
Man, yes, they have. I mean, you would hardly believe it's the same people.
Well, anything about the sack plays, were you surprised that we were able to get to him so easily?
I was, because it's the mobile quarterback, right? And so getting to a quarterback is a challenge, nine times. That doesn't happen. And you think, well, getting to a mobile quarterback is that much harder. And so, I was impressed that we got to him so many times. And again, not just the sacks, but the other hits that we got on him, hit him as he was getting rid of the ball, or hit him as he was, scrambling to get to the line of scrimmage, or, what have you. He took a number of shots, and that's impressive.
Oh, there was, I should have gone back and counted the number of times he was, he had a rush for no gain, and see how many of those. Yeah. I'll have to go back and see how many of those could have possibly been sacks as well. What else jumped out at you on defense? Marlon Humphrey, got beat. We had our seems like once a game get beat for a long pass play, and then he came back and redeemed himself due to that quarterback pressure. How did you think the secondary played?
They were okay. I don't think they were lights out like we've seen before, but they were okay. We did give up, I gave off the stat, 5 different players with, nearly 20-yard receptions or more, and, some of them were pretty far down the field. Marlon getting beaten and coming back with a pick, we've seen him do that before. Minka Fitzpatrick went out and Tony Brown came in, everyone says, well, when somebody goes down at Alabama, they just bring in another 5-star. And, you and I both know that, yeah, I get your theory, but that's not really, really what happens. Except for as I watch this game and I see Tony Brown come in for Minka, and I see Damian and Bo come in for Henry. I'm like, well, all of those guys are 5-stars. So I guess guilty is charged.
Yeah, it's fun to be an Alabama fan.
It's a good time, right?
There's not a lot of guys that there's not a lot of people that can say that for sure. I will tell you real quick. I had to go back and check this. So our buddy Prescott, he had 2 runs for 1 yard. So he had a couple plays there that was 3 runs for 1 yard. So he was pretty close a couple of the times. Tell me real quick about Eddie Jackson. I don't know if you sense this in the game, but there was one play early in the game where we read the play on 3rd down. We had everything schemed correctly. Eddie Jackson came up to make the play and was juked and had to recover. He just seemed to be running pretty deliberate on that knee in this ball game. He seemed to be favoring it to me. Did you notice that?
I can't say that I did. Clearly he didn't have, I say a big game. He didn't even have his typical game. And so, if he was favoring that a little bit, I wouldn't be that surprised. He was dinged up and you can kind of fight through it in an LSU game, but maybe a week later, it's still kind of lingering. So I think he still has an opportunity to get healthy. He'll get back to form.
I'm not mad at him. It just looked like he was favoring the leg a little bit, and just wanted to see if you had noticed that, because I think that kind of contributed a little bit to his play. Anything else jumped out at you on defense before we do mini game balls?
Yeah, 2 things. So you and I have kind of had a friendly back and forth on the defensive linemen, and so you're a Jaren Reed. And I'm an A'shaun Robinson, but man, what do you think about Jonathan Allen, man? 7 tackles, 3 sacks. And you know what his most outstanding demonstration on the day was?
What?
He made Saban bleed.
Man, Man, see, I wasn't even going to talk to Jonathan Allen because he was going to be my mini game ball. So I was just trying to leave it alone. And you had to totally F that up. So good job. You know, for the boy to get his shoulder knocked out of socket early in the season, come right back a couple days later in practice, you know how I feel about this kid. This guy is going to be the Wallace Gilberry who plays in the NFL for 12 years because he does the little things. But he's bigger than Gilberry. He's faster than Gilberry. And he has a pass rushing ability better than Gilberry. So, oh my gosh, he's not going to be the headliner. He's going to be on the other end from the headliner, and he is just going to freaking rack up because of it.
I think the mantra in the draft is going to be, you know, Alabama defensive lineman, no need to rush. There's enough to go around.
You know, when you went back and looked at the stat line, though, you know, you had to be surprised to see where he finished on the stat line.
Oh yeah,
I was like, oh my goodness.
I've just got one more thing.
Okay.
On defense, and I did a double take, and so, you know, just give me your off the top sort of reaction because I was just astonished. But Adonis Thomas, a true freshman, got his first play on Saturday.
Yeah,
this late in the season, he burned a red shirt, and I thought, I don't know why we would do that.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. You know, in what situation, with all the depth that you have, okay, and with all of the linebackers who don't get as many snaps in the game because of what base formations you run, it really makes you wonder why you do that right there. You can't even file this under your roster management that you like to say.
No.
That's just somebody making a mistake.
Well, it's like contra roster management, right? I mean, I can't remember the player. I want to say it was like
– wasn't it D. Liner?
Yes, there you go. Yes. I was thinking D4, but
yeah,
Auburn. But D-Liner played against Tennessee.
With D-Liner, yes.
Yeah, D-Liner played against Tennessee that time. And we both said, we could go back and find the podcast, we both said, well, I guess we're going to see a lot of him the rest of the season. And I don't think we saw a lick of him. And so I think, man, for those couple of plays against Tennessee, he lost the red shirt. And it just, you know, that's typically, I mean, let's face it, you and I used to see that a lot under other coaches. We don't see it much under Saban because it's kind of, why would you even do that?
Well, right. You're right. And when it happened with D-Liner, though, we were very thin at defensive line.
Right.
And we had some guys who had just gotten, you know, hurt for the year. And so you could work your way into the logic of, well, next man up, we got to see what he can do.
Right.
Well, that's not the case with linebacker.
No, you know, you think of Holcomb and you think of Christian Miller, who's redshirted last year and hasn't, you know, he's played some special teams. You know, you think there's any number of guys that could have been used in that capacity. So I don't know. I saw it and I was quite surprised. But anything else on defense?
No, man. Give me your mini game ball.
I'm going Geno Smith. He really laid some wood a couple of times on Saturday. He really stepped into the box last week against LSU and made some big tackles. And so he's the smallest of our starting DBs. And he has played pretty physical over the last couple of weeks. And I think his play the last 2 weeks has been amongst the best play that he's given us all season. And so I'm just giving a tip of the cap to Geno Smith.
Well,
Geno Matias Smith.
That's all right, man. You can call him Geno Smith. He definitely has played well. He's definitely come on here the last 2 weeks. I would agree with that. You know, as far as my mini game ball, man, I'm just going to share the love, and I'm just going to give it to the front defensive line. Just because of this performance, you and I can go back at the years we've been doing this, and there has been complete seasons where we did not have 9 sacks of the quarterback on the season, much less in one game. And so for all the reasons we talked about it, I'm giving it to the defensive line.
Nine's a small number for a season, but I definitely agree with your philosophy there. I agree with your point.
I bet you we can find a season where we came pretty close to low double digits for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't argue with that point.
All right, tell me. Yeah, go ahead. You got to talk to me about your punter, man. What the hell? Has he been reading his clippings too much? What's going on here with JK?
You know, I don't know. You think of a sophomore slump and you think, it's a punter, he's just go out there and do what he kind of always does. And I don't know if he didn't like cowbells or what it was. I could kind of make a reason for his, in Dallas and sort of in that stadium. That kind of made sense to me. But some of what we've seen, I guess he's human, I don't want to be unrealistic in my expectation. But, man, he set a mighty high bar last year. And, he's hit it a couple of times, but not as consistently. I mean, he burst on the scene last year.
Well, and to be fair, it's because he did such a good job last year, right? Because you and I have been doing this long enough that he averaged 40 yards for the game. Well, that 40 yards average is higher than other punters did on their best day that have punted for Alabama.
Oh, absolutely. And
so it's funny to say, well, you finished with 40 yards. What's wrong with you? But yeah. I think part of Mississippi State's, we always talk about flipping the field. And I think part of Mississippi State's ability to have 87 plays is they had some really good opportunities. I mean, I'm looking at one time early in the game, 4th and 7 from our 19. JK punts at 37 yards. They get it at the 40. They start from their 47, right? And we can go look at the field, but there's another punt here. He had another 30 something yards. And so when you look at the starting field position for Mississippi State, they really had some good opportunities, with the ball early in the game. And I think that really helped as far as them on offense.
Yeah, I agree. What else on special teams?
Now I just want to talk about Cyrus, always want to, give credit where credit is due. He told the announcers that they had a block called on that punt return, which I'm surprised it didn't look to me like they were in a punt block. So it looks to be surprised that they were going after the ball. If they were truly going after the ball and he took it upon himself to make a play because he saw a crease, then good job, because something good needed to happen to this team. And, they always talk about that spark. Well, we'll never know if that was a spark, but we definitely needed something good to happen at that point. And, whenever that did happen.
Yeah. A lot of people don't like Vern and they don't like Danielson. And I can understand people not liking Vern. I mean, I don't dislike him, but I can see the point. I do not understand why people don't like Gary Danielson. Because he's just insightful, knowledgeable. He's not a jerk about it. I just enjoy listening to him. And so when Cyrus made that return, he just made a very simple statement that just resonated so much with me. He said, "This Alabama team is explosive everywhere." And it just made me think, long runs for a touchdown, long passes for a touchdown. We block a punt for a touchdown. We return a punt for a touchdown. We return interceptions for a touchdown. We, fumbles. This team can have a bad day somewhere. And in fact, we had good and bad days kind of at every level. But this team can have a bad day somewhere, and it's talented enough and explosive enough to buoy itself anywhere. And so, they were moving the ball. We got a goal line stand, but they were moving the ball. The offense was stagnant. Cyrus had kind of, flubbed a punt. And so he was really aggressive in that one and found a lane and a cutback, and he was gone. And he's been getting better, kind of better and better each of the last couple of weeks at coming closer to breaking one. And, you couldn't write up, a prescription for a big play need, and it fit the bill kind of any more this season than what we saw there.
Oh no, absolutely. It was and you know, we talked about this kid's speed in the A-Day game when he was a freshman,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And we you and I talked about that closing speed and that burst. And that's what we saw in the middle of the field there where he split the seam there.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Hey, and you know, you talked about, you know, we were going for the block and Saban talked about that in his press conference. And I love listening to his press conferences because, you know, sometimes they're really entertaining because he'll just get on people. And sometimes they're entertaining just because the way, you know, he talks and answers questions. And then sometimes there's just a joy because you will learn something about football that maybe you suspected, maybe you haven't looked at it, you know, a certain way. And he talked about that punt and he said he called it a bulldog punt. And he said, well, you know, we call it that because Georgia first did it to us and, you know, we kind of liked it. And, you know, he said sometimes if you're going to hold up and so you're trying to do a punt return and you go to hold up, the gunners and the punting team, they can read that. Hey, you're trying to block me. That means you guys are not coming after this one. So I can release and go tackle your guy. But if you rush and you actively are rushing to block the punt, then the blockers have to actually stay in and block to prevent you from blocking. And he said it kind of I can't remember exactly how he phrased it, but it kind of messes with their return and with their coverage.
Makes them hesitate.
You force them to stay in and block, and then that can bust their lanes. And I thought, man, that's pretty clever. I've never thought about it that way. And then I started to think, why would you not go after every punt? But
yeah.
You know, I'll have to listen to his next press conference and let him explain that one to me
to get the answer to that one.
Right.
Hey, what did you think about the there was one time that we had an opportunity on a punt and they called blocking in the back on Sean Burgess, and they really could have called it on Tony Brown as well. When you go back and look at it, both of them side by side, made blocks in the back there, man. That was a costly penalty that cost us some key field position from a special team standpoint.
You know, we just got a lot of bad penalties, and you know, I had one of our listeners tweeted us during the game right after Cyrus got his penalty. You know, it's face guarding. I think actually he made contact, but you know, he said, "Oh, not turning to the ball." The podcast crew is going to talk about that. And so, you know, it's kind of funny. We just had quite a number of penalties and, you know, Saban was kind of, you know, clearly frustrated in his presser about, you know, at this point in the season, we should not be having these kinds of turnovers. We've got to do better. And if it's, you know, if it's turning to the ball or just not running into the receiver before the ball gets there, you know, the blocking on punt return can be, it can be a little tricky, but you know, if you can't see the number, don't hit it. And I know that's hard because even on the punt return that went for a touchdown, there was a block that could have been considered
yes,
a block.
Yes,
back. And so
yes.
you think it's, I should go ahead and do it because it maybe won't be seen. And, you know, you probably really shouldn't.
Well, in that situation for those two guys to do it, well, Cyrus, you know, he had a fair catch, right? So he had a fair catch on the 45-yard line of ours, but we lose 10 yards, you know, on the penalty, right? And it turned out it didn't cost us because Calvin really got his big touchdown, but it could have there. And it just seemed like neither one of them made the effort to get in front of the guy. But I'm, you know, you mentioned our listener talking about Cyrus, you know, and his pass interference. As soon as he did it, I said, obviously it's pass interference. You don't turn to the ball, they're going to call it. And yep. I didn't bring it up on the defensive side of the ball because I'm just tired of talking about it. Because you've said, well, they must be coaching this, and the you know.
Do you disagree with that? Do you disagree that we obviously must be coaching that? Do you think that's an incorrect statement?
I can't. Okay, Nick Saban is a defensive back guru, right? So obviously we must be teaching it, but I must not know shit about football then, because I don't know why we're teaching it, because it's pretty common sense that if you are in their face and you are impeding them to put their hands up to catch the ball, it's going to be called by every freaking referee in the United States of America. So if I ever get to ask him a one-on-one question instead of the dumb questions that the media ask him on Mondays, I'll ask him that question. I'll say, can you bring Mel into the room real quick? I'd like to ask y'all this question together. And I will ask him, and then he will cuss at me, and he will never invite me back to a press conference, but I will at least get my question answered.
I'm going to make it my mission to somehow get like an inside the Beltway answer on that one. I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I'm going
to We have got to find out.
I'm going to chase that this offseason.
We have got to find that out, because I do not understand why it's being done, and they're going to call it every time.
Yep. All right. So that's going to be my off-season homework assignment.
All right. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about this next opponent here, man. What do you think about this next game coming up?
Charleston Southern. I think this is an opportunity to look, and I don't want to be rude about it. I think that this is just one of those games that we've got to fill out our roster, and we play an 8-game SEC schedule. We're not afraid to go play a big highlight game against a team like a Wisconsin. And so we've got to an SEC championship game that we potentially play. And so, you know, you take 8-9, we're going to play 10 games that, 10 games on our schedule that some teams don't play more than one or two teams that would crack that list.
Right.
And so the fact that we're going to play, Trucking U doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me in the way that some people get all worked up about it, because they're picking a point on a schedule to have, a headline or clickbait around, but they're not using intelligence and logic and piecing together a larger puzzle. They just don't understand the game in a way that and apparently, the conference that they sort of endorse isn't as strong to kind of where they get the need for this, right? And so that's fine, and I'm fine with that. And so we're going to play this team, and we're going to treat them with great respect and their fans. But this is a team where, the old cliche about picking your score, that's kind of what we're going to be able to do. I hope that we get the starters in there for a couple of series. I hope almost like treat it like an NFL preseason game, right? Where we're going to go out and play the first quarter with our starters and then start to rotate some of the guys in. Should the offensive line play a little bit more so that the timing with the backup running backs? Yes, absolutely. So they can get some cohesiveness, as a unit. Do they probably need it? Yeah, that's fine. If we can get them out at halftime, then I'm fine with that. And then rotate in some of the younger guys in the backfield and across the front as well. I'd like to see us I'd like to really see us not wasting anybody's red shirt. I mean, hell, we better see some Adonis Thomas as far as that goes, but without burning anybody's red shirt, we should play everyone that is ready to play.
Well, if it's any consolation, 6 hours ago, Florida State added Charleston Southern to their 2016 schedule.
There you go.
No, man, I really hope that who was the opponent that we played when we brought Callaway over from defense to run because Drake was in the doghouse?
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about. I can't think of the name.
I got you on that one. This better be that kind of game. That's why I said I don't want to see Derrick Henry. This is where I wish I could be the coach, because I would start the game with the second string offense. I would say it is up to you to win the game. I wouldn't even start the starters.
Yeah, that, I hear what you're saying. I mean, that's just not going to happen. Was it North Texas?
I think so, but, have to go back and check that. But no, I I'm glad that we play this game before we play Auburn, because Auburn does it for the same reason. So last year we played Western Carolina. It was our homecoming game. We won 48-14. It could have been uglier. You know, what do you see this score as? You know, throw something on the dartboard for me here.
Yeah, you know, it'll be something similar to that. If it's 48-7 or 48-6 or 48-13 or, you know, that's kind of all the same score, in a game like this. We might intentionally, you know, kind of pull in and not try to get over 50 because I just don't think, you know, it wouldn't do us any good, and I don't think we want to embarrass anybody. And unless someone, you know, breaks a long run in the fourth quarter and Saban gets hopping mad, which I would love to see just because to me that's one of the funniest things, you know, that he does. You know, I don't think we cross 50, but we get right up to it.
Well, it's funny you just said that with the get right up to it, because I got a little funny trivia for you. So 2012, real quick for the listeners, we played Western Carolina. Guess what the final score was?
What is that, like 49-3?
49-0.
Okay.
So that's about as close as you can get to 50, right?
Yeah.
2013, we played Chattanooga. Final score, 49-0. Hilarious, I think. Yeah. 2014, we score 48. So to your comment, the last 3 years, we've scored 49, 49, and 48.
All right.
So I'm comfortable calling the final score 48-3.
We put a 40 something on an Auburn in there too once, didn't we?
Yeah. What do you give the score in this one?
You know, right at what we're saying. You know, I think, you know, if you go 49, because that's just 7 touchdowns. You know, if you want to go 49-3, 49-10, something in that range.
Okay. Well, man, I just want to, as you and I would say in this ball game, we just want to get out with any injuries. And get some guys some rest. You know, Eddie Jackson type of guys, they don't need to play a lot.
Right.
You know?
Yep. Just give them a little bit of run, some game action, but just get them out of there.
I'd like to see Brandon Green get a little extra run here in this ball game.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, man. Well, I've enjoyed it.
Absolutely. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.